Good evening. We're privileged to be back at Wiseball Community Church here in Shoals, Indiana. And yes, the last time I was here, much different. And that was only maybe a month and a half after we'd met, but I was sure of marriage at that point. And looky here, I was right. No, I think it was a little more than 2 months. Not much more. Yeah, thank you so much, Brother Ziegler, and the church for having us here again, having an addition, I guess, this time. We are so thankful to be here with you all.
And this has been a little bit nostalgic for me because I came here a lot my freshman year of college. And so it's been kind of neat to reconnect with a few familiar faces here. And I noticed there's a great group of kids here tonight. So I do have a little gift from Honduras, but I only have one with me. So after our presentation, I'm going to have a really hard question for one of you guys. So the first hand I see up that can answer my question gets a little gift from Honduras.
First kid's hand, right?
First kid, I'm sorry, yes.
Sorry, older people. One of our services, an older guy raised his hand, so no. We are Jeremy Nestor Hopkins, in case you don't know who we are yet. We have served for 2 years with Hope International Missions in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. And prior to serving with HIM, I graduated from Union Bible College and Esther from God's Bible School and College. We'd both grown up with a passion for ministry, for missions. We basically all of our lives had wanted to do missions. Esther, before we'd even met, had already been in conversations with HIM about being a missionary. So God really planted our pathways together at the perfect time in the fall of 2020. Something good actually came out of that terrible year of 2020, thankfully. And prior to that time, I'd been to Honduras many times during college, and I'd really fallen in love with the country of Honduras, just fallen in love with the people, and I felt God's leading to go back to the country as a missionary. And as I was following God's call in my life, I was actually already starting my deputation, and Esther and I's paths crossed there in the fall of 2020. We dated, we're married, and we moved to Honduras in the fall of 2022. And over these last couple of years, we have pastored a small church in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, and helped with the educational needs of the community, the church's community. And we fell in love with the people and the beautiful country that we are privileged to live in. And after a little over a month of being gone, we miss it a lot and are more than anything, ready to get back to work there.
So within the country of Honduras, where we live in the capital city of Tegucigalpa, and then our church is located in a neighborhood called Las Uvas. And Las Uvas is actually one of the wealthiest neighborhoods there in Tegucigalpa. When people hear our church is in Las Uvas, they're like, oh, your church must be a little wealthy, because that's where a lot of the doctors and diplomats would live. But in reality, just on the other edge of a hillside is a group of our church people that are very, very impoverished. None of them would have really much of the modern conveniences that we would take for granted. They're very, very poor. They would work very menial jobs that just get them enough money to live from day to day, and very little education to support them.
Many people ask us, just what do you do in Honduras? And the more we thought about it, the more we realized we do a lot of the same things that pastors in the U.S. do. We have church services 3 times a week.
And most of those services include a couple stray dogs wandering through.
We offer discipleship classes for new converts.
And sometimes they come as a family of 4 and 1 motorcycle.
We visit people in their homes and enjoy sharing great food with them.
And this food usually consists of delicious rice and beans or tamales, or as we recently got to try, a soup called mondongo, which is cow stomach soup. And that was a new one for us. And I have to say, the soup was surprisingly delicious. I did not love the cow stomach texture, but the soup was very good.
We manage an education and transport system.
And it's perfectly fine that we have 26 kids riding on our 15-passenger bus.
We invite people to church and help our youth in evangelism efforts.
And while most Hondurans are eager to talk about God, we found that the aspects of Catholicism have a tight hold on their daily lives.
We pick up people for church services and events.
But driving laws are a little few and far between. It's kind of just based on common courtesy if you desire to give it.
So while we found a lot of similarities, there are the obvious differences between Honduras and here in the U.S. And one of the biggest differences is that they speak Spanish and we speak English. And I'm going to let Esther talk about how we learned the language of Spanish.
So one of the privileges that we had there in Honduras is we spent our first 5 months learning Spanish. And that was obviously a pretty huge task for us to think of where to even start to begin to learn that. And Jeremy came with a little Spanish knowledge. I went in with pretty much nothing besides a little Duolingo. So we got to live at a beautiful colonial town called Copan. And Copan is a tourist site there in Honduras. So it has Mayan ruins and beautiful mountain views. That picture right there was our back deck where we lived with a lady during language school, so that's not a bad view to have to go study Spanish with. And we got to ride motor taxis home from class every day, walk to the local market, and just have a really unique experience there. But sometimes life isn't always as picture perfect as some of the pictures may appear. And during October, November, we had a few less than picture perfect months when the rain caused a bunch of the pipes in the mountains to burst, and we were without water for many days, with very muddy water for weeks at a time. And we always had plenty of water to drink. That wasn't a problem. But, you know, when you get to the end of a hot Honduran day, it's just not the most appealing thing. They know what we're talking about. It's not the most appealing thing to go get a shower in that. So one night, I was a little depressed and just kind of tired of it, just wanted a clean shower. And Jeremy tried to encourage me by researching all the health benefits of mud baths, but it did not improve my frame of mind that night at all. But we were so grateful for where God sent us for language school. We felt like our teachers were exactly who we needed to help us for those 5 months. They were really great teachers, and they did teach us a lot of Spanish grammar, but they just spent hours every day just talking in conversation with us, so that way when we got with our church people, we'd be more familiar with having conversations. And they also taught us a lot about Honduran culture, about some things to do and not to do. And they told us lots of stories, and unfortunately for them, their town had just had tons of missionaries come through that, honestly, you really couldn't even label as Christian. It was just kind of horrible hearing some of the stories. But one that stood out to me that wasn't even one of the worst ones, but just kind of an example of what not to do, was an interior designer that had come through there. And she was there in the language school, and they had heard what she did, seen some of her work, and they were going to paint their school. And she's like, oh, I'd like to help you paint. And they're like, well, we can't really afford to pay you. And she's like, oh, no, I'll do it for free. And they thought, well, this is a really nice missionary. She's going to help us paint our school. So she picked out all the paint colors for them and then went to San Pedro Sula, the nearby city, and bought the most expensive brand of paint that was possible to buy and handed them the bill. And that was a little tough for them to swallow because that was way more than they were thinking of paying for that paint. But then the real thing came in when they started the project and they realized that when she said that she was going to help them paint the school, she meant she would pick out the paint colors. So she sat down and let them get right to work, and she would sit back and critique them and tell them that, you know, they missed a spot and needed to do it better there. And then she would snap her fingers and tell them when she was ready for a Coke or an ice cream or a meal from the restaurant down the street. And if you know anything about Honduras, you never snap your fingers. That's for dogs and cats and not for humans. And so it just kind of really offended them. And you could tell hearing our teachers talk about it, and they would laugh about it, but it really hurt their feelings in a lot of ways. And we learned through so many of their stories that we were going to make so many mistakes, lots of cultural errors, tons of language blunders, but the one thing that had to be present was our love for the people.
Last time I was here, I shared 4 first-term goals, and I didn't have on there marriage, but that happened too. Before our first term officially started. But as Esther already mentioned, we studied Spanish for 5 months, and if a lot of people ask us, are you fluent yet? And I often wonder, what does that actually mean? What does fluent mean? I don't think I'm fluent in English yet. Just this morning, I was trying to say a word, and I probably can't say it right now. It's just a hard word to say in English. And so I don't know that I'm fluent in my own language. But yes, we try to teach, preach, and communicate all fully in Spanish. We don't use any means of translator except for the occasional Google Translate to ensure that a text message, or sometimes we have to go look up a word. And even then, it's a little sketchy because Google doesn't always have the right words, but we try to hopefully get the best words we can out using what we have in our heads. And our teachers did a great job of getting us the basics of the language and a lot of good grammar and also vocabulary. But that doesn't mean that we haven't had our fair share of just absolute blunders as we have gone through 2 years of living in another country. We have said things that are not supposed to be said. We flipped vowels and said vowels wrong and said something wrong and misplaced a consonant or something. And we've said some really funny blunders. Some can't even be said in this pulpit because it's just funny. It's too funny. And but a couple of them that I'd like to share tonight. So we were going to one of the gang-related areas. San Pedro Sula used to be known as the murder capital of the world because of the gang-related violence there. It's not anymore because the government has cleaned some of that up, but obviously still is pretty gang-controlled. And though we're not really afraid while we're there, we do watch our backs. We don't do anything stupid. We're not involved in the gang, so they don't really bother you if you're not involved with them, and from far as we have experienced. So we were in this area that's very highly gang trafficked, controlled in San Pedro Sula, in the murder capital of the world at that time, you know, a little farther back, I guess. But we were there, and this is the neighborhood that's known as one of the most dangerous in this dangerous city. And so when we tell people we're going to La Planeta, they're like, oh, you're going to La Planeta. And this is in the capital city, 5 hours away. They know about La Planeta. So we get there, and I'm starting to tell the story of Paul and getting on the boat and the shipwreck and all that, and I'm trying to say the word for sailor, which is marinero. Marinero is sailor, and I say marero, which means gang member. And so I said Paul got on the boat with the gang members, and that didn't go over very well. But I don't think many people understood and caught it. I changed it pretty fast. Another experience I had was going to a local pulperia, which is like a corner store, and I still struggle, but the word for soap in Spanish is jabón, and the word for soup is sopa. Well, that just doesn't make sense to me. So sopa is soup, and jabón is soap, and I still, every time I say it, I get confused and struggled. So I went to the local pulperia and tried to get laundry detergent, and I didn't know how to say laundry detergent, and so Esther told me, well, say soap to wash clothes. So, well, that's easy. I'll say jabón para lavar la ropa, soap to wash your clothes. But when I got there, that transformed into sopa para lavar la ropa, which is like soup to wash your clothes. They were very gracious. She figured it out without having to do much. I actually didn't notice until I got back, and I told Esther that she had told me the wrong thing to say, and I told her what I said, and she said, you said soup, not soap. We've also tried our best to learn the culture there, and definitely a very friendly, warm culture. People are just overly expressive and very friendly. When you come into church, you'll be greeted with a God bless you, with a handshake, with a hug, and there are obvious differences between our cultures, and one of those big differences I've noticed is that people here in the U.S. tend, not always, but tend to have a pretty large personal space, personal bubble, and you don't want to get in that personal bubble. Some people, and that doesn't mean anything, some people do want to be close to you when they talk to you, but for the most part, the majority of Americans are pretty far distance people, and not in Honduras. I remember Esther coming home one day, and she's like, I left like a foot of space in front of me, and this guy like barges right in the line. So if you leave three inches, that could leave enough room for someone else to get in there. So you have to be as close as possible to the person in front of you. They ride on buses and taxis like that, so they don't really think anything about it. A lot more close. That's one big difference we've noticed. We've also worked at developing relationships and beginning working in the local church. And although these have kind of been our four overarching goals, our main goals, our overarching goal has been that we wanted to love Christ and to love others closer to Christ. And we've tried to do that in the last couple years through pastoral ministry and through children's and education ministries. After about 5 months of language school, we moved to Tegucigalpa, the capital, and we started working with Erica Hannah Coons, who had been there. They've been in Honduras for almost 18 years now, I believe. So we wanted to learn from them, glean from their knowledge and wisdom. And that was a great time of understanding more about the culture from them, understanding about how to pastor in Honduras. I never pastored in the U.S. nonetheless, but pastoring Honduras can have some differences. Preaching in Honduras, how do you do that? That was really awesome to sit underneath their ministry and be able to learn from them, step alongside them, and preach underneath him and have his mentorship in that. But after about a few months, 6-7 months, we officially were installed as the pastors at the Las Uvas Church. And Eric had placed us at the Las Uvas Church because they had a major need in education, and Esther will talk about that in a minute. But Eric and Hannah wanted us to go there and work, especially in education, but also pastoring that church as well. We really enjoy overseeing the ministries of the church. We go there, you know, Sundays, Tuesday nights, and Saturday nights we have our youth services. We really enjoy overseeing the services, overseeing the ministries, and we really loved our time getting to know the people, the culture there, getting involved in their everyday lives, understanding who they are, learning more about their particular culture and their little subculture of Tegucigalpa. And over that year, God has really helped our church to grow numerically, also spiritually, and in unity. One of the goals we had before we moved was we wanted to upgrade the building. Everyone likes to come to church in a nice church building. And although it was okay, it was kind of old. It was wearing. There's a lot of wear and tear, especially around the base of the church. And the church sign was really wearing out. And the paint, although you can't really tell in this picture, was kind of faded. And so we upgraded. Thankfully, people from the U.S. came down, and several people over the 2 years that have helped us upgrade, and we were able to upgrade our church from yellow to pink, which is really weird maybe for you guys, but pink and yellow are actually pretty popular colors, and it's a little more of a coral in person. It looks a little pinkish in there, but we love our new church and our little pink church on the road there, and we also were able to update the inside as well, give the people something good to come to church into, and everyone likes to be proud of their church for the appearance of it as well. One of the most important aspects of our ministry in Honduras is that we want to see people be discipled and trained as leaders. We want to see people get saved and sanctified. Obviously, we preach the message of holiness, and we want to see people live a life of holiness. But we believe that a very important aspect of ministry is to walk alongside someone in their journey of holiness, to disciple them and help them as they become a church leader. And so when we started pastoring in Las Uvas, there were four church leaders that had been there for some years. And although they've already gone through discipleship and already been baptized, they still need some leadership training as well. But these had already been serving in their local church, and to serve in the local church basically means you can teach, you can preach, you can lead singing, lead the service, things like that. And this is a great opportunity basically for the new believers to learn the basic tenets of what we believe and why we believe what we believe. So a new believer can come to the pastor and ask, I want to be discipled. And after discipleship, in discipleship, they learn why we believe what we believe. And then after discipleship, they can be baptized. And after baptism, they can be serving in the local church. I actually like the process there in Honduras. It is a pretty cool process. It's standard over across multiple churches that we've come into contact with, kind of the process of how to make a national leader. So after taking over as pastor, these four young Christians came to us and asked us to be discipled. They wanted to be discipled. They were very excited. And I don't know how to explain it exactly. It's different in Honduras. But as we worked through discipleship, I saw more commitment, more commitment in them, more just energy to want to come to church and be involved in church and testify at church and things like that. It was really awesome to come alongside them and teach them the ways of God and teach them basic tenets of Christianity, but the practical side as well, and hear their input as well, because honestly, as an American gringo, I took in my own presuppositions of what they might think about this lesson, and then they would come out at a different angle totally, and it was really cool to be basically taught by them sometimes on how they their culture would perceive certain concepts of our Christianity. So it was really awesome to walk alongside of them, and God has really helped these two young couples grow. Both of them were living together, but they weren't married, so now they're married. They've been baptized, and they're also serving in the local church. But God's really been working in their lives in an awesome way. God's been working miracles. Just one miracle that has happened recently, the lady in the purple shirt there, she has struggled with asthma since she was 15, and she's about 30 at this point, I think around 30 or a little before 30. And she struggled with asthma, and she would get into our car. We would go pick her up because she couldn't walk the distance to church, and we'd get her in the car, and she would barely be able to breathe, and she'd really be huffing and puffing for breath, and it was honestly just distressing to hear her breathing. And she, you know, medicine would help, but it wouldn't really do anything. And I honestly just felt like God, I was like, God, the only thing this lady needs is your healing. There's no medicine we're going to find. There are good doctors in Honduras, but it's money, and they don't have the money to do it, and I can't provide all the money that they need to do that. And so I really just sought God for that, and I know they did as well. And just a few weeks ago, she let us know that she actually had been free from asthma for a month. This has been almost over 15 years, I think, with asthma, and she had been free from asthma for a whole month, and we're so thankful for how God has worked in her life. And those kind of big miracles in someone's life can be so impactful, not only in Americans here, but I feel like in Honduras, people depend more on God than doctors. And so when they see God come through for them in a big way like that, their trust in God just spikes up, and they want to be a Christian. They want to serve God. And I'm not saying that's always how it needs to work, but it's pretty awesome when it does work that way. And to see their faith growing in God, to see big things can happen in their futures. We're really excited about these young leaders that have started working and serving in our local church. On our final Sunday, as I mentioned, we had a privilege of baptizing them and several others into the churches there in Honduras. After we'd been in Honduras for several months, Eric and Hannah asked us to take over the youth, and the youth have a united service between the two churches in Tegucigalpa. They get together on Saturday nights, and we have fun times. We do games and fun things with them, go to the mall. That's a big fun thing to do in Honduras, is go to the mall. I don't think there's probably even a mall within an hour here. I don't know, maybe there is, but malls don't exist here anymore, but they're really popular there. And we have fun times like that, but also have services. But my favorite thing to watch the youth do is out of youth ministry nights. They typically once a month, maybe not every month, but once a month, they try to do something in ministry, go out and do something. And it's awesome to see the teens have a desire to express the love of God to others around them. One of our activities we do sometimes is go to a nursing home, and nursing homes in general here in the U.S. are sad. I feel like they're even sadder in Honduras. Because if someone's in a nursing home there, it means no one cares about them. So awesome to see the youth go, and it doesn't matter that these people are older than them, way older than them. They sit out and talk with them, share cookies with them, play games with them. It's really awesome to see the love of Christ be expressed through the youth. And the youth are really special to us. We have loved our time being in charge of the youth there, and we've been able to grow in our relationships with the youth as well. Over this last year, I really can't go into much detail, but over this last year, God has enabled us to have deep conversations with the youth about things they're struggling with, whether familial hardships, whether addictions, or just absolute hopelessness, and some even with thoughts of suicide and things like that. God has really enabled us to be a light to them, and we're asking you to pray with us as we continue working with the youth, that God raises up leaders. I know the devil wants youth more than anything, but God wants them more, and we want to do our best to be that person that'll be alongside of them, talking with them about the big things and helping them through the big things in their lives, that they might grow up to be great Christians one day and leaders in our church. When we got to Honduras, there was a women's retreat and a youth retreat happening, but there was no men's retreat. And I felt like God laid it on my heart to start a men's retreat in our country there, not just for HIM, but for all the mission works that are associated with the CHM and others. So we planned it. We got it all planned together, and we planned it for November, actually about a year ago right now, I believe. And we didn't realize at the time that October and November, halfway into October to about halfway into November, is typically like the rainiest season in Honduras. And so we didn't realize that. And so during this time, it's like our snow season. People don't go anywhere. They don't go to any events. They even told us later, we don't even schedule events during that time because we know it's going to be so rainy. And I remember the week of this event happening, and we were coming up to it, and the day before, 2 days before, people were texting saying, well, the roads are so bad, we can't even get out. You know, we're driving on mud roads. We can't even get out to this event. So the day before, one by one, people were just, we can't get there, we can't get there, we can get there. And I remember thinking in my mind, being really discouraged, both Esther and I are very discouraged, why in the world did God lay this on our hearts if this is not going to pan out? No one's going to even show up to this event. So really, there weren't very many people. There were only 8 people that showed up to the event. But let me tell you that God showed up in a great way, and that was the most important thing in that event. Although there were just 8 people there, it was a very intimate time of fellowship between these 8 brethren. I think we all left with a deeper trust and deeper communion with each other. God worked in hearts and lives in a special way. And one of those hearts, his name was Oswaldo. Oswaldo came to the retreat. He did not want to come. He had gotten a pretty big medical diagnosis that week. He had 8 kidney stones in one kidney and 8 kidney stones in the other kidney. And he was very discouraged. He had just lost his son, I think due to murder, like a year before that prior. And he was really struggling, and he didn't want to go. He told his daughter, I don't want to go. But his daughter said, well, I packed your bag. I paid for you. You get in the taxi, you go. So he did. He got there, and he enjoyed his time there. Towards the end of the retreat, we had a special time where Eric gave a devotional on nailing your burdens to the cross. And so everybody wrote their burdens on a piece of paper and nailed it to the cross. And the next week, Oswaldo nailed his burden of his kidney stones to the cross. And the next week, he went back to the doctor, and the doctor did all the scans and the tests and things. And the doctor came back to the room and said, Oswaldo, I've made a mistake. That's the only thing there can be, because there's no kidney stones in your kidneys. And last week there were 16 kidney stones. There's no kidney stones this week. And he said, no, doctor, the Lord healed me at that retreat. That's what happened. That's not a mistake on your part. That was God. And so awesome to see God show up in a great way like that to provide a physical healing. But not only that, Oswaldo also testified later that that's where he got saved during that men's retreat. So a spiritual healing as well. So thankful for how God worked during that men's retreat. So just encourage you, if something you do seems to flop, maybe God's got something better planned for you. And Oswaldo actually was baptized as well in the same baptism service that I mentioned before, and is serving in his local church. This time I'm going to let Esther come talk about our education and children's ministries.
So one of the advantages our church has is that it is a large majority children. There are tons of kids that are just within walking distance. And so if we say there's going to be something, they're all there because they're kind of bored throughout the day. So if we say there's an event, they will be there, especially if there's food involved. And so when we got there, we saw right away that there was a lot of not just spiritual needs among the kids, but educational needs. And we began to just look at what would be the best solution, not just for 1 year, but for long term, that we could help reach out to the community and provide some help for them. A lot of the kids were 9, 10, with maybe 1 year of schooling. One of the little girls that we especially were wanting to start this program for, she had never been to school, was 10 years old, and so there was just a lot of education needs. And a lot of it was that the parents simply couldn't pay for the transportation cost. To pay for all of their kids to ride the bus would have taken literally everything they were making. And so we saw pretty quickly that there were schools nearby, they just didn't have a way to get there, and so they said, well, we have a church bus, and we'll offer a really discounted price, and so the kids can ride that bus, and then we pay one of our leaders to drive that. And so he's happy because he has a job, and the kids are happy. Well, they were happy at the beginning of the year to go to school. At the end of the year, they're not quite so happy, but they are happy to be going to school. And then the parents just pay a little bit, and then they come to a monthly parent meeting as well. And that parent meeting has just been a really good time, not only to connect with the parents, but just to do some education for them as well. There's just a lot of things that maybe the kids are struggling with in their homes that aren't necessarily the parents' bad wishes. It's just sometimes a lack of education. So going over budgeting, which they all really enjoyed, and just talking about how to plan a budget for their family and how to save some money, and talking about what is abuse and what is okay and what is not okay, and really good discussions that we were able to have with a lot of the parents, and just talking about how important it is to keep their kids in school, even though it's such a tremendous sacrifice for them, even at the discounted rate we're giving them. And we've told them about how for their kids, for kids living in poverty, every year of education that they can achieve represents a 10% compounded interest on their future salaries. So it's so huge that they can go to school every year. And so right now we have about 25 kids in our after-school program. They also come to after-school classes with me at the church on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And also it's helped provide more families for our church as well, because they want to come and be a part of that so that way their kids can go to school. And there are lots of kids that I could tell you about tonight, but one of them is a little girl named Evelyn. And Evelyn is just a joy to watch. She loves God. She's excited to serve God. And her mom is one of the main leaders in our church. So it's just been so neat to kind of come in and see some of that results that have been in Evelyn's life. And sometimes it just makes me so happy to see all the things that Evelyn has that her mom didn't have, that she has that mom that's just investing in her life. And this coming year, she'll be going to high school, one of the very, very few in her family to ever attend high school. And I have no doubts that she'll go on to be the teacher that she dreams of being. Another little boy that has definitely made his way into our hearts this year is a little boy by the name of Jason. And Jason, as you can tell, is as cute as they come. He's the sweetest thing you'll ever see. But he has just honestly the worst story I've ever heard of neglect and abuse and just horrible things that have happened to him. And so as we started our school year out, we knew he probably wouldn't be going to school unless we helped him out a little bit more. And he has a mom and dad and aunts and uncles, but he just honestly, we never know who he's spending the night with. He's just all over the place. And so I took him to the mall to get all of his school clothes and get everything he needed to get on the bus for school. And we were shopping and getting all of our things. And towards the end, if you've never taken a kid who's never been to a mall before, I just want to let you know that it's pretty exciting. He had never seen any of this stuff before. So we rode the escalators about 10 times that day, and he had a blast. But towards the end, he got a little sad because he's like, I really need tennis shoes, because if I don't have tennis shoes, I can't do gym class. And kids can testify, gym class is pretty important, right? So we hadn't found any tennis shoes for him. And I said, well, let's go try a thrift store. We can probably maybe find a good price there. And we went to the thrift store, and he wasn't finding any shoes in his size, and he was getting sad. So right there at the end, he saw a little pair of red shoes, and he said, oh, I think those are my size. And so he grabbed them off the rack, and when he grabbed them, they fell on the floor, and his little dreams just came true in that moment, because when they fell on the floor, they lit up. And if you're an 8-year-old little boy, and you have lit up tennis shoes for gym class, that's pretty much the coolest thing that can happen in your whole life. So he got just so excited about these shoes that lit up. And it was just a really special moment to pull him aside and say, Jason, I don't think that was an accident. I said, I think God did that just for you because he really loves you so much and he cares about you so much that I think he put that little pair of shoes there just for you. And it's been so neat to see Jason just grow. And he's one of those kids who I've never honestly witnessed a kid who just has such an open need for affection. And that whole day shopping, you know, or anytime he's in the back seat of my car, just his hand is, if I'm going, you know, to get gas or anything, he just wants to go with you. His little hand will be resting on your shoulder. He just wants to touch you in some way because he just wants some affection so badly. But that middle picture there on the slide was him in after school one day, and one of the helpers asked him to draw a picture of where he feels, where they felt loved. And when she looked at Jason, she said, oh, is this your mom and dad, or who is this? And he said, no, this is me with you and Jeremy and Esther when I'm at church, because when I'm at church, I know I feel loved. And so it's exciting to see Jason begin to respond to a little bit of that love. But as any of you that have worked with kids with trauma know, that there's a lot of good days and a lot of bad days and difficult days, a lot of ups and downs. And I read a book recently that's really helped me in how I interact with some of the children there in Las Uvas called The Connected Child. And as many of you know, working with kids that have been neglected, abused, malnourished, or worse, it can be a long and difficult process. But the book likened it to these kids being like a bank account that you're continually investing in, and you're investing, and you're investing, and you're investing, and that every meal that we give them, every hug that we give them is an investment. And we don't just do it because we want to show them love, which we obviously do, but we do that because sometimes as adults, we have the hard job of asking them to take a little bit out. We have to say that they have to trust us, that they know what's that we know what's best for them, and that they really can trust us in some of those hard decisions that they have to make, those hard choices, those things that are really hard for a little kid to understand why or what's going on in their difficult little life. And we do that not only so that they'll trust us, but that way when we tell them that there's a God who loves them so much that even though they can't see him, that even though he lived before they were even born, that he really does care about them. He really did die for them. He really did rise from the dead for them. And that when they go to believe in that, they don't only just have enough in their little bank accounts to trust us, but they have enough to trust their Heavenly Father as well. And that's what just one of the reasons why we feel that education is so important to reaching the kids there in Las Uvas. And not only that, but I just want to encourage you tonight that if you're one of those people investing in kids that come from trauma, that come from a rough background, that maybe it's a little weary in the well-doing. It's a continual daily showing affection, showing love. I just want to encourage you that there's nothing better than to keep investing in those bank accounts, because when you get to see the reward, there's nothing better than seeing the eternal rewards that God has for those kids. And we got to see just a little snippet of one of those rewards recently, right before we left. A church had offered to pay for Bibles for our Sunday school kids. And so we had a contest, because kids always like things better when they've had to earn it, right? So they had a little contest, and they had to memorize the Ten Commandments in order and come to Sunday school faithfully. And there were 9 kids that did it. And so we took them off to the Bible Society, and I hadn't even thought to tell them, but they just assumed they were going to get a little paper Bible like they'd seen at the church before. And we took them to a Bible Society there in Honduras that is this great, big, beautiful building with dozens of pretty options and all the colors that they could want to choose from. And so they walked inside of that building and just saw all these options of Bibles, and we're just kind of blown away. And the one little girl grabbed my arm, and she's like, oh, Esther, don't you just want to cry seeing so many Bibles in one room? And so they had such a fun time getting to choose their own Bible. But then every Sunday, every service since then, they'll come running to church with their little Bibles, trying to find, any time a scripture is mentioned, they'll come up and afterwards and say, can you teach us how to find Bible verses faster, because we want to find them in church service. Our little boy came up to me and he said, I just finished reading the book of Psalms. And so it's just been so exciting to see that God's word is still so powerful, and that it can really change these kids' lives, and it really does make all the difference for them. So we're so thankful for all that God has done for us and what he's done in the last 2 years. We're also really excited about what he's going to do in the future. And before I move on, is there a kid who can tell me, what is the food in Honduras that I don't love the texture of? Cow stomach, you were on it. All right, come see me afterwards. I've got a present for you. There's a lot of kids here. I have another question. Is there, I'm sorry, this has to be a girl because I only have a girl. I have a boy present and a girl present. Is there a girl who can tell me what is the thing that Jason saw in the store that made him know God loved him? Red tennis shoes. All right, come see me afterwards, and I have a present for you as well. So we're so excited to look forward to the next term and the next few years and what God has for us there. We want to just continue doing what we're doing, working with the kids. It's been a huge learning curve, just trying to figure out what the Honduran education system was. I was a teacher for 7 years, but going to a new country is just, It's just a whole new thing. And so we want to continue working with our after-school program and figuring out how we can best help the kids there and also connect with the local school and help our kids just better learn how to learn. We want to work with them to develop special, specific skills to use in the future, such as music. The kids are all really excited about music, which we know is great for them, and also for the church and Bible study and job skills. And then also another future event that we are most excited about is that Jeremy and I are in the process of adopting. So we are in the beginning stages of adopting 200 children ages 2 to 5, and we are just excited about the days ahead and what God is doing there. We are in the beginning stages. We're in the early thing where we've done all the education and the home studies and that stuff, but we're waiting for the placement. So Jeremy's very optimistic, and he thinks it'll only be a year until we have a child. I say at least 2, because I'm not very optimistic sometimes, so we'll see who's right. But we're really excited about what God has in the days ahead.
Yes, and Esther normally mentions but failed to tonight that we actually have candy for everyone, Honduran candy for everyone. So if you didn't get the question right, there's candy for you at the back after church. So stop by and see us. As Esther mentioned, yeah, we are very excited about what God has for the future, excited to adopt, and looking forward to this finalizing this international adoption. If you know anything about international adoption, if any of you have followed the Melton's journey, we are on similar journey as they are, just much farther behind them, much farther behind them. And so if you follow their journey, you know it's a process. So pray for us as we go through this journey. They were actually very instrumental, or I should say, their daughter, Kaliana, was very instrumental in our deciding, officially deciding. She might have sealed the deal for me. We met with Daniel Melton one night, and we left, and I said, well, I think, let's do it. And Esther said, I think Kaliana did a lot more than Daniel Melton did. And it was very true, very, very true. It's hard to be around a cute little girl like that and not decide, well, adoption is a good idea. So anyways, looking towards the future, also thinking about leadership training. Love to see our leaders trained better, as I mentioned. Not that they don't know anything, but we want to help them with their biblical foundation of knowledge. Often here in the U.S., we have people like myself, a third-generation Christian. I was born with a fundamental knowledge of the Bible because my dad pastored. And many people there are first-generation Christians who don't have that foundation. So we'd love to help them in their learning of that foundation and getting more of that foundation for them, teaching them how to preach better, how to teach better, how to read the Bible. Right now I'm in a biblical hermeneutics class, and it's just so important to really be interpreting, exegeting the Bible correctly and not just reading it for what we want to read it like. And so things like that, big things like that, to pair alongside of our Bible Institute that's already currently running online. But leaders love to have meetings, and they love to have seminars and things like that. So those kind of things to help our leaders to become better equipped for the future. And pray for them as well. We want to see them be called into ministry, into being the next pastor or the next missionary, whatever that God has them to be. Right now, they're kind of leading everything by themselves, and they're doing a good job. And we're really thankful for what they're doing. This is kind of a good testing time for them, a development time for them as they take over the work and do everything basically that we do all by themselves. So God is really blessing them. Another aspect we don't know exactly how it would look yet is that of literacy training. A couple of our national leaders don't know how to read and write, and several people in our church would not know how to read and write. We would love to help them somehow have classes. Again, don't know what that would look like yet. Would love to be able to offer something for them to be able to learn how to read their Bibles. So many people, I've had several come to me and mention they'd really love to read their Bible, and they're trying to. And honestly, I do think God enlightens some of those people, and I think they're able to read maybe more of the Bible than anything else. And so pray for us as we look for options, as we consider what we can do in the future. So as we go out and obey God's great commission in our lives, we're so thankful for those that have come alongside of us to be commission partners. And thank you to church here at Wiseball for your faithful support and for your faithful prayer support as well over these last couple of years. They have not gone unheard, and we're so thankful for your backing us while we're there on the field. God provides in ways that we never could have asked or thought. When I went to be a missionary, I was worried a lot about finances, and I Definitely, now that I've been there for 2 years, I wonder, why in the world did you worry about that? God had it all taken care of through people like you that gave on a regular basis, gave when the Lord laid it on your heart. So thank you for being that church, being the people that came behind us. God answered our prayers through you, and we're so thankful for that. God provided abundantly more above than we could ever ask or thought, and because of that, we were able to, in our first term, do so much more in ministry, projects and things like that that we hadn't really planned to do before. So thank you so much for your faithful support. As we look to the future and thinking of adoption and thinking of having two more kids in the house, or maybe two more kids because she considers me a kid too, so one of her kids already. But we're thinking of that and hoping to raise a little bit more support on a monthly basis, and so we're looking at raising $1,000 a month more, 40 shares of $25 a month. And if the Lord would lay it on your heart and you would want to come alongside of us on a monthly basis, feel free to write it in that card how much you would like to give on a monthly basis. It can be $10. $25, $50, can be any amount you would like it to be. We also are raising money for projects, and anything that comes in the offering tonight will go towards our Las Uvas Education Fund, unless otherwise marked, and then we will use it for what you have marked it for. But we are raising money for two projects, our Las Uvas Education Fund. We would love to be able to buy a new church bus so that our kids are going to school on a good church van. This morning, I asked Jordan Jackman, if anybody knows Jordan Jackman. He was just in Honduras. I said, how would you describe our bus? He said, rough, rough. It was rough. It was a rough bus. It works. It runs, and we drive it, and we do what we need to do, but it's probably not going to last much longer at the rate that it is needed to be used on a daily basis. And we need a newer and nicer bus. The seats are kind of falling apart as well, and when you're trying to cram as many kids as you can in a little bus, we do want a bigger one. And by bus, I do mean a 15-passenger van. We do call it a bus there, but it's a little bit smaller than like a big bus here. So we're looking at raising $25,000 for that as we will buy one there on the field. And prices there are a little bit higher than here. So we're thinking of $25,000 and $10,000 for Las Uvas Project. We are raising money to build a new Sunday school room. Ours right now is really small, probably like 10 by 20. And the kids are crammed in there usually. Sometimes there's like 25, 30 kids, and it's really hard for the teachers to even have any space to really do much teaching. And so we'd love to extend that out, make it a bigger classroom. But also, it is made out of wood currently. It's kind of a lean-to, leaned onto the wall of the neighbor, next-door neighbor. It's literally just leaned onto that wall. And it is made out of wood, and it is being eaten by termites, so it won't last much longer. So we want to make it out of concrete so it will last for more of like a lifetime. So we're looking at raising money for those, and God has provided so much, and we're so thankful for that and our deputation thus far. We also are raising prayer partners, and we'd love for you to come alongside of us and pray for our church leaders, that they would grow spiritually and that they would be called to ministry, to be pastor, to be a missionary, or whatever. And also pray for our after-school program, our children and youth, and our adoption as well. So I was here 4 years ago, but if you do not receive our newsletter and would like to, just fill out this form. It is fairly self-explanatory, but just put your name and address. If you'd like to receive a paper newsletter, if you'd like to receive an email newsletter, put your email and name, and we will get it to you. I will say the email typically has more pictures, more information, just because you can only fit so much on two pages versus an email. I can put almost as much as I want to in it. So a little more information there. But if you'd like to receive our newsletters, sign up there. And if also you'd like to support us financially, you can sign up there as well and just hand us these cards after service, and we will get your information in following. Thank you again so much for having us here. If you'd like to, you can follow us on Facebook as well. My Facebook URL there. Esther more than I tries to be very faithful in posting, giving updates about what's going on in Honduras. Probably the most current and updated information is going to be there on our Facebook page. Sometimes I look over the city of Tegucigalpa and I see the hustle and bustle of what a city of over a million people makes. I think about all the people that are hurting and broken living in that little city of Tegucigalpa. In our short ministry there, we've had the privilege to talk to people that we've seen how sin has just torn apart their lives. Some people are so attached to their addiction of alcoholism or whatever, their bitterness, that they can't give that up to God or give it up at all. And they're so attached to it that it's eating them alive. And it's so sad to see them. They're hurting and broken, searching for something that they're never going to find in the addiction that they're looking for. It's had a terrible toll. Sin has a terrible toll on their lives. And as Esther and I have gone to Honduras, and really as when we got married, we made kind of as our overarching goal in our marriage that we wanted to love others closer to Christ. We wanted to love Christ and love others closer to Christ and obeying the two great commandments in Matthew 22. We want to see people changed, and we think that the best way to help the hurting and broken people all around the world is to shine the love of Jesus, our love, the love of Jesus that he gives us, shine that love to those around us. So I'd like to leave you with a question today. How does God want you to show his love to those around you? Where does God want you to go to show his love? There are mission fields open. There are pulpits open. There are people all around the world that need our love, that need the love of Jesus expressed to them. There are people broken and hurting that you probably work with on a daily basis, that they just need the love of Jesus. They need someone to be there to listen to them, to talk to them, and to help them go through the things that they're going through. God really wants us to be the light through showing his love around the world. So we're going to finish up with a song, and it's in Spanish and English. So if you hear singing a little weird lyrics, that's why it's in Spanish and English. And it's a song talking about our love to God, our love for God. And I'm really convinced that our love for others comes from our love for God. We can't love others unless we love God. And if we love God, he's going to help us love others, even when sometimes it's hard to love them. And so as we sing this song, worship with us, and I'm convinced that, yes, God's love is how we're going to conquer the problems in our world around us.
Excelsa gloria bajo el Salvador, Jesús mi Redentor, nació en pesebre, despreciado y pobre, varón de lágrimas y de dolor. Oh, cuánto le amo y fiel le adoro. Él es mi vida, mi Redentor, el Rey de gloria. Sacrifice of Calvary, and all I know thou art the great I am. Oh, how I love him, how I adore him, my breath, my sunshine, my all in all, the great creator. and all God's fullness dwelleth in Him. Oh, quanto le amo, y fiel le adoro. Él es mi vida, mi Redentor, el Rey de gloria vino a salvarme y a revelarme al Dios de amor y a revelarme.